Hey there, podcast listener. Steven here from the podcast you're currently listening to. You ever heard a podcast and think, I can do that? Well, maybe you can, or maybe you can't. Or maybe I can help you get started with it. Hosting is the most expensive cost you'll have in a podcast, and that's why Anchor by Spotify is the easiest way to make a podcast. Really, they have everything you need all in one place. Anchor has tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. With Anchor's hosting, you can distribute your podcast to other listening platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and a whole lot more. And if you think you can do a better job than I, record a podcast right now. There's very low risk involved. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. And best of all, Anchor is free. Download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started today.
Of the battlecruiser Enterprise.
This is Captain James Kirk of the USS Enterprise.
This is Jean-Luc Picard, Captain of the Enterprise.
This is Captain Sisko of the USS Defiant.
My name is Catherine Janeway.
Prune juice, chilled.
He basically said that because Star Trek's been popping off, so he's like, they're talking about four different movies. Nothing's concrete, but one of them they're talking about how Prodigy would work as a movie.
Right.
And it kind of reminded me of what Star Wars did with their animated series. They have a film that would be on the TV.
Right.
You know, and I'm like, that's a great idea. You know, I think the more Star Trek, the better. See, some people, they like to sit here and go, oh my God, this isn't my Star Trek. I'm like, fuck that. Put the Star Trek insignia on everything. Even if I don't like it, it's still Star Trek.
Well, to me.
And I haven't met Star Trek that I don't like, to be completely honest.
I mean, to me, Prodigy was entertaining, but it wasn't my Trek because there were no white people in it.
That's right.
You know, I was.
That's coming from a Mexican.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like
no. Janeway's in there at the end.
She's a hologram. That don't count.
I mean, she's a white hologram, though.
But she was in it for like 30 seconds of the.
What was your real take on that show? I was impressed.
I like the animation. Everybody looked
definitely a family show.
Yeah, everybody looks so doughy eyed.
Yeah.
I was like, oh yeah, this is the modern animation where everybody looks doughy eyed. Everybody has those Princess Jasmine eyes. Yeah. You know?
I did think it was a pretty high end animation for what it is, though. Because lately cartoons have real simplistic, like even Lower Decks. The animation, it's not bad. It's just simple.
Well, it's Rick and Morty.
Right.
Yeah.
It's that simple look, but this one went full artistic.
Yeah.
You know, and I was loving the fucking the scenic views and shit. The ship was amazing looking.
Yeah, like the aesthetic, the artwork, the designs and all that stuff looked great. To me, the music particularly popped off because even in the opening theme, like when you're listening to if you kind of closed your eyes and listened to it, you can actually hear the Kelvin musical influence. You have the original Star Trek musical influence. Voyager had some in there. You know, there was a lot, and there was a lot of that. I like the fact that they used Kazon, so they used one species that we could all remember. You know,
yeah.
I was like, oh, Kazon.
Oh yeah, the Kazon.
Yeah, I was like, oh, the Kazon. Voyager, Janeway, gotcha. All right, so we still have no idea where this planet is and who these people are, but but I did like the fact that he also used the oh God, what was that? Prisoner Zero. What was that?
The race that if you look at him, you'll go insane.
Yeah, which was based off of the original Star Trek TV series.
Yeah.
I was like, because I kept hearing that. I'm like, why does that sound familiar?
And then I had to look it up.
I looked it up and I was like going, oh, right. It goes, that was the one that Spock looked into and was blind for like a couple of hours or whatever. I go, yeah, I remember they didn't have any kind of corporeal form. And
I definitely enjoyed it. I watched it twice, actually.
I liked it more than I thought I would.
Yeah. I was kind of convincing Steve because Steve's one of those people like animation. Ugh, you know what I mean? I'm like, just watch the fucking show.
I'm not totally against it. It was just kind of like, all right.
It's technically a kid's show, yeah, so it's kind of like you're like,
Because to me, but, even some of the kid shows that I watch are a little too stupid or a little too dumb. You know?
Yeah. Nowadays, absolutely.
Yeah.
But this one definitely wasn't.
I miss the old days where you can get the I miss the old days where you would have the adult double entendre joke that you didn't get as a kid, but when you watched it later, and you're like, oh shit, they put that in there. You know.
So my son had an interesting take. So my 11-year-old son, he wanted to watch it with me, and we've been like hanging out. Like we've been watching that, and then. We've also been watching all the Star Wars movies in chronological order.
Thank you. I go, thank you.
I mean, we've been having a great, great fucking time. And we watched Prodigy, and I go, what do you think, man? And he told me it was really cool. He said some scenes that he liked and some characters that he liked. But he said something that was a little above his fucking tax bracket age-wise, and I thought it was kind of interesting. Because he said, you know, because he watches mostly anime. Mm-hmm. And he goes, you know why I watch anime? And I go, well, I assume because you like it and the girls are cute. And he goes, besides those two things. He said, anime, unlike American kid shows, doesn't assume he's an idiot. And I go, talk about that a little bit more. And he goes, whenever I'm watching like a cartoon that's made in the United States, I feel like I'm too smart to watch it.
Yeah.
Like they're talking down to me.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't like it. He goes, this show didn't do that. He said, I really enjoyed this show. I liked it. It was like he thought it was an anime. Mm. He was like, is this an anime? I said, no, Star Trek's an American. I go, there are Star Trek like mangas and stuff. But I was like, no, this is American. And he really liked the anime. He's big on animation. So he was like, the animation
American,
is very clean.
God damn it.
That's right. I says, born and bred in America. he was excited.
Don't you disrespect Scott Bakula that way by calling.
He's excited to watch it again. And it's piqued his interest. He's like, you know. Maybe we should watch some other Star Trek shows or whatever. And I was like, yeah, I'm always down, bro. But we have been watching Star Wars.
The minute he said that you had up Paramount Plus with all the Star Trek movies on there.
Like, I'm ready, bro.
We doing this now.
We could do this. But I'll throw this in since it's not – I mean, it's kind of relevant. But he loves – Star Wars Lego sets, and then he told me randomly, and I don't know why I didn't know this, but he's like, I've never seen a Star Wars movie. I'm like, what? And I go, but you talk about
I failed you as a father.
Right. I go, but you talk about the storyline. He goes, well, that's because I played the Lego games. I go, oh my god, dude, like, I mean, the Lego games are good, but it's kind of a bastardization of the story, you know. So I said, okay, well, let's watch them all.
Don't cheapen Star Wars that will just make you feel that way later, but you actually have to watch the movies first.
I said,
We haven't got to the sequel series yet.
I know. I said, not only are we going to watch all the movies, but we're going to watch them in chronological order. We're not going to watch them in release order because Lucas is a fucking lunatic because that shit was released. Even Clone Wars, the cartoon. Like the cartoon series,
right.
There's a list on how you're supposed to watch it because whoever put that show out, they put it way out of order. Like the first episode of the cartoon starts in the middle of a season, like the second season. It makes no sense. But so I wanted to bring this up because I was telling a friend of mine who's big into Star Wars, who's not Steve, he goes, you're going to watch the first three first, right? And I said, well, no, watching episode one and episode two, but then technically, if we're going in chronological order, the Clone Wars movie, the animated film, fits in between two and three. And he goes, well, you don't have to watch that one. I go, I know I don't have to watch that one, but it is an extension of the story, and it's the one that introduces Anakin's Padawan. What's her name? It starts with an A. She was at the end of Mandalorian.
Oh, right, yeah.
So that's the first appearance of her. So she's an important character, and she's going to be a very important character. I think she's getting her own show or something like that.
Yeah.
I wanted
Hayden Christensen is supposed to appear in it.
Right. And I was like, not only did I want it for that, but also I respect the story either way. It doesn't matter if it's fucking animated. I don't care, you know? And he was like, that's stupid. Why would you watch that fucking kid shit? I said, first of all, you're acting like Star Wars is Macbeth. Calm down. I was like, it's...
Wait. Are you saying it's not?
We're watching something. We're enjoying it. And not only that, I'm showing it to my son so he can be interested in it and further look into it, because I wanted to throw that movie in there. One, it's on the list. If you look up chronological order, that movie is there. But I wanted to show it to him because there is a whole cartoon series that he can watch. And he wants to now. He wants to watch that series. He's like, when can I start watching? I said, you can start watching that series whenever you want. Just know that it's before the third one when you're watching it. And he's like, okay. He's the one that found out it was aired out of order. So it's like a big thing online. But he goes, so are you going to watch the whole show before you? I'm like, no, of course not. That would take me forever. And I'm like, why are you so upset?
I know.
And he's like, I said, you know what? I'm going to stop right there. I know why you're upset. You're one of those fans, aren't you? That Star Wars is a particular way in your fucking head. And because you didn't watch the animated series and shit like that when you were a kid, they don't exist to you. Right. And he's like, well, they don't. Only the movies matter. He goes, and then he goes, it's just like Star Trek. Only the TV shows matter. I'm like, you're fucking wrong there too.
Okay, because some of the TV shows refer to the movies.
The movies are definitely relevant. And then I told him, I said, it's going to blow your mind too. Star Trek and Star Wars, the new books are now relevant to both of those canons. The older ones are not, but the new ones are. And he goes, no, they're not. I'm like, you're fucking weird, dude. I don't know why you're so upset about this. Like, why are you upset that I'm showing a movie to my son? What the fuck? Jesus. It's not a porn, dude. Calm down. You know? But I had a good time. It was a good movie, and I hadn't seen that one. Definitely it's animated, and it's a little bit more geared for kids. So it's just one big action movie, yeah. You know? And they were – it was about somebody – kid. You find out someone kidnaps Jabba the Hutt's son, and – the Republic wants to get this kid because they're not. It's the war ain't going too well, you know. Obviously, we know the story. And Jabba the Hutt would be a good ally to have because they'd have access to the trade routes through his space. I've been getting fully into Star Wars, bro. I'm learning so much shit. Okay, and you find out that it's the fucking Separatists that actually abducted the kid, and that fucking. What's his name with the red lightsaber with the curled hilt? That's fucking dope.
Duke Mace.
No, not me. No, Count Dooku. Yeah, Count Dooku. He's in it, and it's the original guy doing the voice. He was in it. Samuel Jackson was in it. The dude who did Yoda was in it. But Obi-Wan and Anakin were different.
Well, yeah, because it's out of their pay rate.
Right. So, you find out that he was not only lying to the Hutts, but he was having Jabba's fucking aunt also double crossing him because convincing her that she could get his role. It was layered. And again, he said, this movie doesn't think I'm an idiot either. And I told him, I said, there's good American animation. You just have to find it. It's not all the shit on Disney Channel, even though. Technically, Star Wars is now the shit on Disney Channel, but he knew what I meant.
Yeah.
So he wants to watch that show, but then I told him there's no more animated movies, and we're not going to watch any of the shows, but I will tell him where they fit if he wants to watch them, because there's like Rebels.
Yeah, there's Rebels. There is the Clone Wars TV series.
The Bad Batch.
The Bad Batch, which I haven't watched yet.
I haven't watched that either. There's the older one. I told him the older cartoons. I don't know for sure. I was actually going to ask you, but they seem like they're just fun. They're not really that important. Like the old Ewok cartoon.
Yeah, the old Ewok and droids. Those were just like.
It's kind of silly 80s cartoons, yeah. You know? So I told him those probably aren't that important. To the because he's very he's a big canon kid, you know, he's an anime kid,
yeah.
You know, so he's really into that. So he was asking me what should he watch, and I told him any of the newer cartoons.
You what do you want know? From me, kid? Jesus.
Well, called, I'm the same.
It's called the internet. I
mean, I'm the same like with Star Trek and stuff yeah. like that. So I definitely and I've it's not just him. I've been getting into it too. You know, I'm like okay, you know, because this the thing with Star Wars is it's. You can't say Star Wars or Star Trek are better. You can like one more than the other, but they're different.
Yeah.
You know, like Star Wars is more like Lord of the Rings than it is like Star Trek.
Yeah.
Just because it's in space doesn't mean it's like Star Trek. It's a fantasy. You know, it's and Star Trek's more of a science fiction. You know, so and I was explaining that to my wife who did not care, but she was humoring me. And she was like, yes, honey. Uh-huh. Wow.
When she's doing that, you go like, and then the abandoned storyline was when, Leia and Chewie had this like torrid love affair
yeah.
and he would remove his penis, which actually flowed. Everybody go, what? It's like, oh, now you're listening. Now you're listening.
Now you're also, I'm watching the original trilogy and I just want to let everyone, you know, just in case they need a confirmation, maybe things have changed. Natalie Portman is hot. but also her and Jaden Christensen's chemistry is horrid
yeah.
in these movies. And I think the second one, I liked this. I was telling Steve, I don't think I saw the second one because I don't remember any of it. But everything was great except for the fucking the love affair shit.
Yeah.
I know it's important, but I didn't care at all. And are we just going to gloss over the fact it's kind of creepy that she met him when he was like 7 and now she's trying to get that ding-a-ling. You know what I mean? Like,
you know,
I don't know, bro.
Well, I always thought that it's, I've seen Hayden Christensen and I've seen Natalie Portman in other movies and they've done.
They're
really
both
well.
Amazing actors.
The problem is that Lucas isn't a great actor director.
Right. We had this discussion not too long ago.
Yeah. Where you can tell the actors that don't really need a director. Like Ewan McGregor and Mace Windu,
but they were younger at the time, weren't they?
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, the prequels were done like 20 years ago.
Yeah, and, so they weren't as experienced as right. as what we think now.
Yeah, and you look and by the third one, and you'll notice this when you get to Revenge of the Sith. Ewan McGregor looks like he's having a lot of fun in that.
I do remember that. I remember he's less. Almost less serious in the third one. It's yeah. that whole hello there. Like yeah, he's having like a good time.
Yeah, and the one part where he's like, you know, he says after the first main battle, he goes, this is the third time I've saved you. He goes, no, this is only the second. That other time, that doesn't count. You know?
I kind of dug it,
yeah,
you know?
So, but yeah.
But he's definitely an actor that he doesn't need a director to hold his hand. He's yeah. not new.
Right.
Or he wasn't new when he was doing that.
Yeah.
I know... Christensen, wasn't that his breakout role?
Yeah, he was more of an indie guy beforehand
because yeah.
he did a couple of little indie stuff that, and that's how
George. On, I'm gonna be real, like no disrespect to the Star Wars people, but he comes off as a whiny bitch.
Yeah,
a lot of times, and then there was one part
Kevin Smith,
where I
kind of Smith kind of said he goes, but that's who Darth Vader would be.
He that's goes, true. It does fit. Little. It does fit. Yeah. And it's funny because I thought about that. At first, I'm like, what a bitch. And then I'm kind of like, well, Darth Vader is kind of – he's like a spoiled brat.
Yeah.
You know, that you wouldn't say to his face because he'd kill you. but the part where he kills all the Tusken Raiders when he finds his mom.
Yeah.
And he comes back and he tells Padme, I didn't just kill the men. I killed the women.
Oh, yeah.
I killed the children. I killed them all. Padme didn't even blink. And I was like, that isn't in character for her. Someone should have told her, hey, yo, you might be upset. Hey, just, you know, I don't know.
You know what? You got to do what you got to do, honey.
Yeah. That's basically what you said. Listen, we ride together. We die together. Bad boys for life. I was like, this motherfucker is crazy.
Suddenly they're riding off in the desert in a convertible and shit. You know, just like.
Oh. What made more sense is if she kind of was like, she looked concerned but didn't say it and then immediately told fucking Obi-Wan, like, hey, this motherfucker flirting with the dark side. You need to see what's going on with him.
I mean, there's the dark side, you know, with the whole Sith and stuff like that, but he's got a dark side. I'm telling you that.
Like, he's gonna suddenly start wearing all black and not breathe on his own, kind of dark side. You feel me? Like, I think you need to do something about it.
It's gonna sound like he's on a respirator or something like that. I don't know. It's that a thing, like that thing you do when you go snorkeling. You know, that kind of breathing. You know.
A friend of mine was like, I don't know why people are afraid of Darth Vader. He's such a bitch. And I go, did you see Rogue One?
Yeah.
And he's like, no. And I'm like, bro. And I sent him that scene. And he goes, oh, shit, this motherfucker's the boogeyman. I said, I told you, bro.
Exactly.
I said, he goes, well, they don't show this in the original movies. I said, because they couldn't. You know how expensive that scene would be in 1977? <bro?"> And it would look like shit.
But that was a cool thing because – I think that was the beauty of Rogue One. By the way, we'll get to the Star Trek podcast in a minute. But
first of all, if you're a Star Trek fan, you should be respecting Star Wars too. Yeah. If you're sitting there going, "Oh fuck Star Wars," just knock that shit off, dude.
But one of the things is that, like, Rogue One was the first independent, you know, Star Wars movie after the prequels. Yeah. So you have the prequels that came out, and in some instances, a lot of people said it kind of weakened Vader because we saw, like, Anakin become a whiny little, you know, whiny little bitch. It's a different from what we see in, like, the original trilogy.
Ominous presence.
Yeah. Basically. But the thing, the beauty about Rogue One is that last scene turned Vader up to 11 when you're kind of like, oh, yeah, no, he's still a badass. Like, that whole scene where he just.
It's kind of where you realize, like, he's a badass, but he's also the boss. So he's delegating. He doesn't have to be everywhere.
Right.
He has an entire army. But then when he does need to be somewhere, he better not be there. That scene, I watch that scene every once in a while. Like, it's just such a good scene. Like, and it's everything. And Star Wars has always been known for the music amplifies everything. You're just like, what the fuck? And these people were like, they weren't just extras to me. These motherfuckers were terrified when they were running away. They were like, oh, shit.
Oh, man. All right. With all that being said, welcome to the Away Team, a series that recaps each episode of Star Trek in canonical order. We discuss all the tropes, Mary Sue moments, and blatant racism within the franchise. That doesn't mean we don't love the franchise. We just love it enough to accept it and call out its silliness. I'm Stephen Vargas.
I'm Adam Riley.
Before we jump into another little bit that I, you know, that most of you probably would know by this point in the month, this is our last episode before Thanksgiving. We will have a regular episode come out for those of you venturing out on Black Friday. So you'll have a Black Friday episode next week. So we want to wish you all a happy Thanksgiving. Now, we're recording this a couple of weeks in advance. Do you have any plans for Thanksgiving? Like, you know what you're going to be doing?
Nope.
Nope.
My wife might take the kids to see her mother because I'm encouraging her to, because her health hasn't been 100%, right. Her mother's. But that would mean I don't go. So she's kind of torn. Like, I've told her it's fine. Go. We can have a second fucking Thanksgiving. Just have it on another day. It's not a big deal. But she's kind of like, she doesn't know what she wants to do yet. So I might not even have Thanksgiving on Thanksgiving Day. But honestly, having everyone out of the house for a couple of days is the gift that keeps on giving. It's early Christmas for me. I'm just fucking chill, you know, but yeah, so I don't know.
Yeah, but if you listen, but when this episode comes out, this would be his answer. But on the Lazy Geeks, which is usually a week before, a week later than this, we'll probably have a little more definitive of so
yeah,
if there's a discrepancy, that's why.
Depends on where you want to be in the timeline.
Exactly. So. And we have a listening order on how you should listen to this these podcasts. also, if you have Paramount Plus this month, especially.
And if you don't and you're listening to this podcast, what are we doing?
And this month, by this time, this should help your viewing over the holiday weekend. All Star Trek movies are available on Paramount Plus, original, obviously. Next Generation, and the Kelvin. So all of those and all of the series are all available there. By this time, we have Discovery app going up. Prodigy will still be going up. You can catch up on the last two seasons of Lower Decks. So there's a lot of stuff going on Paramount Plus. So
my son asked me, he's like, we should do this with the Star Trek movies too. Like, watch them. I'm like, you kind of have to watch the shows. Like, the movies don't make any sense if you've never seen the shows.
Right.
I feel for Star Trek. But whatever. I'm not going to get into that again. So rolling right into it. Okay. This is episode one of season three. Titled The Zindi.
UPN Wednesday. You are going on a brand new journey with Star Trek Enterprise. Leave everything you know behind. It won't work here.
Captain, but I'm just itching to kick the hell out of you. I don't belong on Enterprise.
No.
Enterprise. Enter the Delphic Expanse.
Let's see what's in there.
Star Trek Enterprise season premiere.
First aired on September 10th, 2003. This one's written by fucking Rick and Brandon. Because it was the season opener and ender. Yeah. The Zindi, 6 weeks into the Delphic Expanse, the crew is tipped off by a freighter captain who knows a lone Zindi working on a remote mining colony, who was annoying as fuck in this episode, by the way. I forgot. This is episode 2 of 28 for the Zindi Crisis arc. Basically the entire season.
Right.
What am I doing? Okay. The Zindi Council is discussing the coincidental arrival of the Earth ship. The Zindi reptilians and Zindi insectoids believe it is the beginning of an invasion. Jannar asks when the weapon will be ready. DeGras says he needs time to run in some more tests, but Dalum believes they will accomplish nothing if all you do is run tests. Dalum is asked to learn everything he can about Enterprise. Now, even though that reads much like we know these characters, we don't.
Right.
This is the first time we've seen these people. And I thought this was a cool scene because they're doing it like you've jumped into something that's already happening. So you're getting bits and pieces and you kind of don't know what the fuck's going on. There's a weapon.
I like how the insecticides were like.
Yeah. That reminded me of Star Wars, by the way.
Yeah.
That was something I noticed in Star Wars that a lot of races don't just speak English. But everybody knows what they're saying, so I don't know how the fuck that works. But act one. This isn't a Star Wars podcast. But I've been balls deep in Star Wars lore the last couple of days. Enterprise is en route to a Trillium mining facility. A freighter captain of questionable character, according to Reed, has provided them with a tip that one of the miners there is possibly Zindi. Reed wants to proceed with caution. Archer turns to Reed and asks him what room they're in. It is the new command center, which used to be a storage bay for conduit housings. Archer tells Reed that they don't have the liberty of being safe or cautious anymore. In 6 weeks, they haven't collected any data. So the lead given to them by a, quote, freighter captain of questionable character, end quote, is all they have. Then Archer is satisfied. He's a little pissed off. Archer's very tense.
Yeah.
And, you know, rightfully so. And he pretty much stays that way the entire season.
I kind of like how they use that moment to be able to tell the audience, this is a new room. What does this room do? This is what this room does, you know.
Because you see them in this room a lot.
Yeah. And it's funny, too, because, like, I was thinking where he goes like this. What? He's like, what are we standing in? And then I just wanted Reed to kind of roll his eyes and just be like, do we have to do this again? Like they've done this like 15 times. It's funny
because I thought that too, because that's how I speak to my kids when they're being dumb.
Yeah.
Like, what were you doing just now? And they'll do that like, I was fucking up.
And then T'Pol had that look of like, you done fucked up again?
Like she didn't want to get involved. She's glancing back. Ooh.
He's one of those where you're doing extra more work than you really need to. You know?
Like... for real. My wife actually did that to my son today. He goes, why were you in trouble in class today? And my son's like, well, didn't they tell you? Yeah, but why? You want the kid to admit it. In the mess hall, Hoshi motherfucking Sato approaches a table of Makos.
Mako.
Which is an Mako. Better get it, you know?
Yeah.
Is a acronym, yeah, M-A-C-O. I forget what it stands for. Military associate commando officers. No, I don't know. Here, you know what? Why don't I just click the link?
I was going to say, I can do that if you want to.
Military Assault Command Operations. Yeah. So it's a military division that is – there are some people that are on the ship. But they do answer to Archer, just throwing it out there. They seem to answer to everybody. They call everybody sir and ma'am. So she joins them. They introduce themselves as Major Hayes, Sergeant Kemper, and Corporals Romero and Chang.
Now, for those of you keeping score, Major Hayes is played by Stephen Culp. He was in shows like he was in Desperate Housewives. He was in The West Wing. He's in a bunch of different stuff. But yeah. I was first introduced to him, I think, before I saw him on this. There's a movie called 13 Days, which is about the Cuban Missile Crisis, and it stars mm-hmm. Bruce Greenwood, who plays Captain Pike in the Kelvin Star Trek, Kevin Costner, and Stephen Culp, who did an amazing job playing Bobby Kennedy.
I've seen some clips from that.
Yeah, really good movie. And then the guy that plays Corporal Chang,
obviously, he was in that Voyager episode.
He was in Voyager, but yeah. Everybody else will remember him from Lost.
Yeah.
And also,
I hated that show, but yeah.
And he did, he was also in Hawaii Five-0 for I think the first five mm-hmm. seasons or something like that.
Yeah. He was in one of my favorite episodes of Voyager, actually, where Voyager gets trapped. There's a planet that is moving slower in time, or faster in time, actually. And Voyager gets stuck there in orbit. And so to them, I think Voyager was there for like 2 days, but to them, their entire history, Voyager was in the sky. Hmm. And it inspired them to get into space and all this other shit. It was a really good episode. Voyager, when it hit, it hit. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it was good. When asking Kemper about Phlox, Sato, Hoshi, surprises him by saying where he was from, Duluth, Minnesota. Major Hayes tells Kemper that Sato is a linguist and that
a cunning linguist?
And that given enough time, she could probably tell him which street he grew up on. Chang asks where they're headed, but Hoshi says that the captain will let them know at the right time. Excusing themselves, the Makos leave for briefing. Tucker takes Archer to Cargo Bay 2, where all the equipment has stuck itself to one of the walls. This is funny, too. Archer wonders if it is the grav plating, but Tucker says it isn't.
I like how he goes, it isn't. Like,
it is. Yeah. they watch for a moment as suddenly the equipment is sent flying to the opposite wall, where again it attaches itself. Archer asks Tucker to seal it off.
What was funny too is when Archer walked in,
stay close to the door. Yeah. That means someone walked in there a little too close some point.
Exactly. And it was probably Trip.
For real. Just ran in there and flies at a wall.
It's like, ah, shit.
T'Pol enters sick bay, where Phlox is studying epithelial? Yeah. Cells. Cells from skin, from the top of the body, is basically what it's saying. Taken from the corpse of the Zindi pilot recently recovered, it turns out that he has reptilian characteristics. Yeah, because they said it looked like scales.
Yeah.
Because he was all burnt up.
Yeah.
So they were checking it out. T'Pol asks Phlox why he needed her for the B storyline, of course. Phlox tells her about Tucker, who is struggling with sleep because of the death of his sister. By the way, this episode, I'm going to say it right now, is the unofficial start of the Tucker to Paul romance arc, okay? Yeah. This is when it all began. Phlox tells her about Tucker, who is struggling with sleep because of the death of his sister. He has been using sedatives, but wants T'Pol to try Vulcan neuropressure with him. T'Pol thinks that Tucker wouldn't have the patience for it. Reluctantly, she agrees. Unfortunately, she was like, I don't think I could get Commander Tucker to sit still for long enough. she's right. Unfortunately, Phlox has already asked Tucker if he would like to try the neuropressure, and he declined. So fucking Phlox out here trying to start some shit. He behind the scenes playing matchmaker.
Dude, I told you, man. He's always behind the scenes manipulating
always,
shit,
bro. Always.
He's like, okay,
it always works out.
I didn't have any luck with Archer and T'Pol, so maybe I'll work my way down the crew.
And Phlox, for some reason, is like, someone's fucking T'Pol on the ship.
It ain't gonna
I don't
be
know why
me,
he's so fixated.
But, you know.
Yeah. He's like, I got enough wives, bro. Good. Enterprise arrives at the mining facility, and Archer and Reed go down in a shuttle pod to meet the foreman at the mine. When talking to him, he wants Archer to give him something so that they can meet the Zindi miner. Half a liter of platinum. He wants it in liquid form for some reason. I don't know. They never really explained it. Mm. Reed says it would take some doing, but it is possible. Well, they didn't explain it because Archer and Reed did not care.
Right.
So it was kind of irrelevant. Archer demands to see the man and confirm that he really is Zindi. However, the foreman gives him a finger belonging to the Zindi, claiming it was an unfortunate accident. So this scene is basically setting up not only what they're doing, but they're in a rough neck of the woods. Right. Like there ain't no friendly shit going on here. In the meantime, Tucker wakes up from a nightmare watching his sister die when the Zindi probe fires up. That's fucking heartbreaking, by the way. Like his sister was at like a beach table or like a pool table,
yeah.
A table at the pool, and he's screaming at her to get out of there, and she can't hear him. And then the fucking beam's coming. I was like, what the fuck?
Dude, I've but had that's dreams like that. I've had
yeah,
dreams
I have
like
to.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's hard. It was heartbreaking, and he woke up fucking dripping in sweat for the ladies, bro.
She was kind of cute too.
What?
She was kind of cute, too.
She was. Not anymore. she's still hot, though.
Right.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Act 2. Phlox has studied the finger and found that he is and is not Zindi. In relation to the corpse, however, the base pair sequencing is much closer than that of humans and chimpanzees. He notes that while the corpse was of a reptilian, the finger isn't. They don't say this, but Archer makes the connection of like humans and Neanderthals. Yeah. So basically, they're from the same planet. I kind of like they did this in the show. It just added a level of complexity that was cool. It kind of showed that the Zindi world is not very organized. Like, right. there's people just arguing all the time.
Well, it's mentioned later that there's a bunch of different versions of Zindi.
Yeah, and they're all arguing on who's the superior one. So it kind of adds a level of bullshit to it where he doesn't just have to convince one race. He has to convince them all, and they're all arguing with each other. You know, so it's kind of crazy. I'm also thinking very too deep into it. Tucker enters and tells Archer that 200 relays must be stripped to get the platinum, but it'll be done by the afternoon. Archer leaves while Tucker asks Phlox for something stronger to help him sleep. Phlox tells him to return at 2200 hours, and he'll see what he can do. It sounded kind of shady. Like, what, you gonna fucking get some shit off the street or what? It's just weird. I'll see what I can do.
I gotta talk to a guy.
I'll talk to a guy. Don't worry about it. Come back. Make sure nobody follows you. You know, it is what it is. Back on the planet, Archer prepares to hand over the platinum, but the Zindi's work group is still asleep. Archer tells him that he can wake him up early. Archer wasn't for that shit because the dude was like, look, they wake up in like an hour. And Archer's yeah. like, bitch, like, wake this motherfucker up.
For this, they can wake up in a little early.
For real. Because it took his people half the night to get the platinum. Yeah, that's why I said to get up. The foreman agrees, takes him down to one of the lower levels. By the way, no one is asleep. They're all walking around. Mm-hmm. Fuck that guy. Tucker asks the foreman what Trillium D is used for, to which the foreman replies, insulation, mostly for interstellar vessels. The Zindi Kessick, that's that, by the way, that's setting something up, but they don't really say it because he asks, what does your ship use for insulation? And they just say, like, the metal that yeah. is there, but nothing else is said. The Zindi Kessick is shoved into the area, and Tucker gives the platinum to the foreman, who tells them to take their time and promptly leaves with his guards. Archer gets straight to the point, asking him if he is Zindi and where their homeworld is, as he has important business with them. Kessick says he'll tell them, but only if Archer helps him escape. Tucker confronts Kessick angrily and rather forcefully, prompting Archer to tell him to take it easy. Yeah, he says, I don't know why, but I'm beat your ass right now, something like that. T'Pol contacts Archer, telling him that three warships are on the way. Realizing that they have to leave, albeit without the information that they wanted, Archer and Tucker make their way to the door, only to find it locked from the outside. Kessick says,
who didn't see that coming?
For real. I actually didn't either. I was like, what the fuck? Kessick says he can take them back to the shuttle pod, but he has to go with them. The person who's writing this is leaving out key information. So basically, Kessick told them, like, it looks like they tricked you. So this is how he gets new people on his workforce. He just when whoever lands there is getting cut, basically. T'Pol is contacted by the mine foreman, who tells her that Archer and Tucker will be slightly delayed as they've had to start deionizing the landing decks for the three incoming cargo ships. He explains that the ships are heavily armed because Trillium D is highly valuable, but Reed doesn't buy it. It's because Reed's a G, bro. I don't have time for that bullshit. Archer, Tucker, and Kessick are wading through waist-deep sewage and reach an access. It was a funny joke. It's like sewage is even worse when it's from 31 different species or something. Oh, I was like, ooh.
Oh, I know. Yeah, where they walk in and their hands are like, yeah, sewage tastes.
And that shit legit looked like sewage. Like, it looked gross.
And then where he's like, oh, you got to reach the lever underneath your knees. And then trips, oh, like,
and then he came up and there was just a little bit of fucking shit on his face. Yeah, I said, bro, like, I'm done. I can't watch.
I would have been like, you know what? Let them kill me.
Yeah, fuck, I'm out, dude. I've lived a long life. Fucking sick of it. The trio gain access and start climbing. Reed and Hayes are discussing their plans as T'Pol enters. Hastings Reed's security team. Hold on. Oh, shit. Hastings Reed's security team is too valuable to send on the mission, saying that they'd be better off defending Enterprise should an armed force come on board. T'Pol agrees with Hayes, but leaves the decision to Reed. He asks Hayes to select six of his men, but Reed himself will lead the mission. After Hayes leaves, Reed tells T'Pol that coming from a military family, he's seen men like Hayes all his life. Hayes just thinks his team would be more successful than Reed. To be honest, I thought Reed was being kind of a bitch because, of course, the Makos would be better at that. They're trained to do that. They're not trained to guard a spaceship.
Well, also one thing he kind of left out, and I think T'Pol kind of knew it, but she just didn't say it, is that the Makos are also expendable.
Yeah, that too. Yeah. And the thing is, the Makos know that too.
Yeah.
That they're not as important, so they should be doing the dangerous thing. These are like, and you can tell when you're watching the episode, these are true and blue Marines. Like, these are Marines. Basically, and there, what the guy said was true. He said, "Look, he's basically saying we should do the more dangerous job. They're more trained in infiltration and shit like that." Also, what he said was 1,000% true. Your men are more trained if someone gets on the ship, because you know the layout, you know this and that. Reed's being sensitive, and Reed does this all the time. And people start fucking in his Kool-Aid. He gets upset.
And also, we learn really quickly that the Makos hit what they're shooting for. Because every time we see ship security,
they don't miss.
They get shot at. They're the ones that go down, you know.
Yo, the Makos were legit. One chick, she had like a baton and was beating the shit out of dude. This is a little later.
But the cool thing was that they kind of took that extra time to show just how different the Makos are versus Starfleet.
They're
security.
Built different. Yeah. Well, because they're
built for tough.
And that scene kind of reinforces what I'm saying, where it's coming up in a bit. But it shows that these are not Starfleet. They're not explorers. They're not scientists. These are Marines. Yeah. You know, they have a mission. They go in. They successfully do that mission, and then they leave. You know, and I think it was cool that the show added them to the ship. I thought it was an interesting. It was smart, basically. I mean, in real life, you would do that. You know, but moving along, Act 3. Back on the planet, one of the guards reports to the foreman telling him that Archer, Tucker, and Kessick have escaped. The foreman tells the guard to put a security force at the shuttle pod. By the way, this episode reminds me of like a Dungeons and Dragons campaign. Like, just the way it plays out. I don't know why. It was kind of hitting some notes for me. Archer asks Kesick why he hasn't used the duct before, but the atmosphere is about 30 times more toxic on the surface, and there has never been a ship waiting for him before. Mayweather pilots the second shuttle pod down to the planet's surface and tells them that they only have half an hour to complete the rescue mission. Also, I don't think we've ever seen this many people on one of them tiny ass shuttle pods.
Yeah.
They were crammed in there.
The thing was, is that even though the episode itself was kind of self-contained because there were no like huge battles or whatever,
yeah,
they were able to spend more money on people in the shuttlecraft.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Also, too, it kind of reminded me, you know, I knew it, but I never really thought about it. These shuttle pods for this time period are fucking small.
Yeah.
Compared to like the TNG. Those shuttle pods were big. I guess it depends. They had a bunch of different shuttles.
Well, yeah, the shuttle pods, they had the compartment, they had the rec area, they had like a bathroom, a bedroom, you know, they had a workout room. I mean, those things were huge.
They're playing fucking cricket downstairs, exactly, you know, all kinds of shit.
It was like a TARDIS.
The best shuttle craft ever made in Star Trek was Deep Space Nine. The roundabouts, yeah, those are fucking fire, dude. I love those ones, and they were like, you could interchange them for different missions and like attach. It's so fucking cool. Anyway, meanwhile, the phone, blah, 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 blah. Kesick tells Archer about the five species of Zindi. Their conversation is interrupted by the emergency baffles being closed and the sound of the plasma coming through them. They were open, not closed. As they don't know how far up the next access port is, Tucker suggests they go back down to the previous one, which means sliding down and fast. Archer makes it in time, and Tucker and Kesick push each other out of the way to get in safely as well. Kesick was pushing Tucker.
Yeah.
Tucker's just like, wait a second. And he's like, fuck you, bitch. Kesick was annoying. Oh, like, no. I'm glad he's not going to be a reoccurring character because he's a fucking dumbass. Really made you want them to kill the Zindi. Yeah. End these bitches.
That part I was kind of like, you know what? Fuck this shit. You don't need the coordinates that bad.
Push that bitch back in. Tucker and Kesick push each other out of the way. Both are pulled in by Archer, who closes the port just in time. Tucker fumes at Kesick, who can only stare open-mouthed at the guards who have just arrived. Kesick tries to feign innocence, claiming that they took him with them. He thanks them and receives a hit in the face by one of the guards' rifles.
They just kidnapped me and said they needed me.
Fucking bitch, dude. He's being a bitch, but also he doesn't need to be aligned with fucking... And he's, you know, he's a prisoner. Like, yeah. What the fuck? You know, he's just in it trying to survive. Archer and Tucker carry Kesick to an open area where the foreman says that they are too much trouble, so they must be killed. As they're taken away, the Mako's Epsel? I've never heard that word before. I mean, it must be come from the ceiling or whatever, because they rappel in with ropes and shit. It's fucking badass, bro. Fucking cool.
I swear to God, I almost heard the dun-dun-dun-dun, you know.
You know what I heard? I heard, be all that you can be. Fucking 90s shit. And starting a firefight. The foreman gets away.
When they came down the ceiling, I heard, da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah, they should have played it too. By the way, I thought the foreman was a really interesting and well thought out character for a single episode.
Yeah, I was actually kind of impressed. Even the actor too, the way the actor didn't overplay it.
Yeah.
But the use of the respirator too. The use of the respirator too was nice.
Right. They're in a mine and the mine's dusty. And they were talking about how all, because I think when they got there, Reed was like, we should have wore fucking breathers or whatever. Yeah. I said, that's all right.
And then Archer was our, try not to breathe.
Yeah, try not to breathe. Archer's really that kind of guy too. Yeah. Try not to breathe. You'll be fine. It reminds me of my grandfather. Like, just, does it hurt when you do that? Well, don't fucking do that. Yeah. We got shit to do. And then the foreman was so well thought out. Like, the actor was great. He kind of looked like his body was like rotting because of the poisons in the air. And he had this respirator that he could swing out of the way and he would start coughing and shit. It was really, for a single episode, it was really well done. I was pretty impressed with that. I kind of wish we would see him again, but I'm pretty sure you never see him again. But you know, who knows? Maybe he'll show up in fucking Star Wars. I don't know. You know, they do all kinds of weird shit, you know?
Crossover!
The foreman gets away, but the Earth Commandos, make short work of the mining guards, killing several. Dude, on target, bro. It was Halo. That's what they were. They were the Spartans, bro. It was fucking great. One of the Makos is injured, but Archer helps him up. When the firefight is over, Kessick begs Archer to take him back to the Enterprise as well, promising him the coordinates of the Cindy homework. They skipped over a part, though. So he goes, take me with you, take you with you. And fucking Tucker's like, not after that stunt before. You can stay. I was like, damn, Tucker ain't playing, bro.
Well, what was cool was that when they got to the shuttlecraft and they shoot that dude, right?
Yeah.
They were And then the Mako guy went over to the other side of the shuttlecraft and then did that Halo headshot.
That fucking snipe, dude?
Yeah, I literally went
to the infrared.
I literally went, headshot.
Headshot. Killing spree. Don't get me started
should have saw the little like ting, like the points, you know, his XP's like.
Fucking Halo Infinite's coming out next month. Don't get me fucking started, bro, because I'm about to fucking queue up. And die, because these motherfuckers are too much. Where was I? As Reed contacts, I came in there a little too confident and I said it wrong. As Reed contacts Mayweather, telling him to set down, more shots come from the mist. One hits Kessick, who collapses. One of the Makos uses his scope to shoot down their attacker, who just happens to be the foreman. It was G shit, okay? Yeah. And it was cool because when he shoots him, the little scope goes back on the gun and Bish just gets up. Yeah. He don't even fucking – he's not like, yeah. He's just like, all right, we good.
Yeah.
These fucking dudes are hardcore.
And it was cool because this was the first time we got to see – because they weren't part of Starfleet. They're military. And even
– we knew they were around. I think we saw them in the first season.
Because
background or something.
Because in the last episode of the finale, The Expanse – the Admiral tells Archer, I thought you didn't feel comfortable with the military, you know? Yeah. So obviously they're not part of Starfleet.
They're the Earth military.
And which is cool because of the fact that you actually, they kind of spent a little time showing them off. Like, look how different they are versus Starfleet. Like,
yeah. They're not here to fucking,
they're here to lay the hands is what they're really
doing. They're not diplomats. Right. If they showed up, you already dead, baby. You ain't talking. On Enterprise, T'Pol asks Hoshi to tell the shuttle pods to dock simultaneously as the warships are closing. The Enterprise then goes to warp. They got out just in time. Act 4. Captain Starlog. Supplemental. The three alien warships followed Enterprise for nearly an hour but couldn't keep up with us. I guess they'll have to look elsewhere for new additions to their labor force.
Because we have that G shit. That's what
happened. Because we the fucking shit out
it
was, here.
It wasn't even the engines were faster. They were just G'd up. You know,
right. So. Enterprise got switches and shit. You know.
Hit the nitrous.
We outran them in reverse. We were going backwards the entire time.
They told Mayweather to kick it. He hit the nitrous button, and they did this shot like they do in those Fast and Furious movies where you see the ignition go all through the system until it hits the nitrous.
Motherfucker was doing barrel rolls and shit. Like, you know.
Do a barrel roll. Do-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Phlox enters Archer's ready room and apologizes, telling him there was nothing he could do. Kessick has died. Fortunately for Archer.
And no one mourned.
No one did. Fortunately for Archer, Kessick told Phlox something with his dying breath, saying that Archer would know what he meant. They are the coordinates. Why didn't Phlox notice what coordinates are? I know he's a doctor.
Yeah, but he should know at least like.
Yeah, you know. But he's also on a spaceship. I mean, right. He should be able to know what a coordinate is.
Yeah.
It's a little weird. Tucker tells Reed that he's been in the shower for 2 hours, he's but like, still can't
not,
get all of
it. It's not my pay rate. It's not my pay rate. I'm not paid to know that these are coordinates. So, you know, go fuck yourself, Archer.
I know they're coordinates, but I don't give a fuck that they're coordinates, okay? It's all team. All right, respect.
I'm sorry. Do you see this face, Captain? This is a face that does not give a fuck.
fuck.
Do you know how many fucking medical degrees I have? None of them say read coordinates. Okay? It's basic work for your basic ass, all right? It's like, fuck, imagine, dude. But still.
And then tosses the thing to Archer and then leaves. Like,
he doesn't even make eye contact the whole time. Like, he's just whatever, dude. But still can't get all the Trillium out of his hair and from under his neck. He wasn't complaining about Trillium. He was complaining about that sewage.
Yeah.
He also tells Reed that the rescue team did a pretty good job, but he's sure that Reed's security team could have done just as well. He was like, they did really well. I mean, your team was good too. Yeah. I mean,
your team would have done well too, you know, but, you know.
But it looked like Reed was like, damn, they fucking handled it. You know, so a little bit more respect coming his way. He was being a little bitch anyway. And it makes sense. Like Reed's the macho guy, you know, and he feels like someone's fucking showing him up.
Yeah. Well, he said earlier, you know, he knows those kind of guys. He comes from a military family. Yeah. So, you know,
but he was being judgmental. And Reed's also, this shows Worf, which really puts things into perspective sometimes. He's not as fucking hot-headed as Worf, but he thinks kind of similarly, where he doesn't want to look like a fool and, you know, stuff like that.
Right.
Reed says goodnight to Tucker. Goodnight, sweetie. Who enters sick bay. He asks Phlox for something to sleep, so Phlox gives him an injection. He then asks Tucker to deliver some bioscans to T'Pol's quarters, and as he is busy with work. Tucker says that's no problem. As he leaves, Phlox walks to a comm panel, contacts T'Pol, saying that she has her work cut out for her. He also said that he shot her with a placebo, placebo. So he has no medicine whatsoever. Tucker arrives at T'Pol's quarters, giving her the bioscans.
God damn, though.
She was fine.
The way she came walking up, I would have been like,
I would have already been walking in. You good? What's up? You need some? T'Pol asks him to sit down. Tucker says he wouldn't be very good company and still needs to take a few showers. T'Pol offers him a cup of tea, but he graciously declines. So he's not being rude. He's just saying, I just want to go.
Yeah.
T'Pol says that she has been having trouble sleeping as well, and says that Vulcan science teaches them to prompt their own bodies to create medicine. I guess Vulcans are Chinese.
Well, you know, pressure points. Well, remember the Vulcans are the Mary Sues.
They're Mary Sues, space elves.
Yeah.
You know. But she can't reach the neural nodes that need stimulating. Okay, this motherfucker is writing this like he's writing 50 Shades. Bro, get out of here. But I'm going to read more. She asks Tucker to help her, then offers the same in return. Unfortunately, Tucker thinks she's making sexual advances before claiming that his sedative is starting to kick in. But T'Pol tells him about the Vulcan neuropressure that Phlox wanted him to try.
But see, the thing that they left out at this part is she's like, you know, he does the pressures on her. And then she's like, you know, I feel the need to repay you. And then he's like, look, I'm like,
he did that like smooth motherfucking shit too. Like, look,
flattered and stuff. But right now she's like, wait, you think I'm coming on you? And then suddenly that smile goes away. He's like, no.
It was funny because he has a weird grin on his face. And then she goes, do you think I'm making sexual advances towards you? And when at first he says no, his smile didn't change.
Yeah.
It's almost like he was caught up and like, no. And then he was like, oh, shit.
Yeah,
like,
then he has this like, no, I didn't think that at all. Like, suddenly he's like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Like, he wishes. He totally read that one wrong.
Yeah. But T'Pol tells him.
That look on there cracked me up when he made that like, I didn't think that at all.
I texted you right away. Like, I'm fucking crying right now. T'Pol says she told Phlox this wouldn't work, that Trip is intransigent, and unwilling to compromise. There's certain words that they use in Memory Alpha that's like, I want to sound smart.
No, that's the word she used. And then she's like, she goes, I told him you were intransigent, and then, you know, which is this. And he goes, I know what intransigent means.
That's true. I forgot about that bit. I was about to say, yeah, but T'Pol likes to sound smart too. Fuck that bitch. Trip protests that he is too willing to compromise. Then then take off your shirt.
Yeah.
As she says. He does, and DePaul begins the treatment.
When she made that look, and then his eyes went like, oh, like all of a sudden it was like, but what the thing that I thought was interesting was when she took her shirt off, like, I was just like, oh shit, she's got like under, like we saw like under boob and like,
yeah,
she's like,
she was holding her chesticles.
Yeah. And I was just like, and I'm like going, oh, suddenly I'm interested in season three all of a sudden. Like, okay.
Early 2000 was getting a little risque on the TV.
I felt like I felt like Denzel go, all right.
Enterprise arrives at the coordinates, as it's written here, given to them by Kesick. There is no sign of technology, ships, or even planets. Archer fumes that he lied to them, but Trip questions why the Zindi would use his last breath to lie about the location of his own world.
Which made sense. I was like, well, he's dying. Why would he lie about it? Like,
yeah, he could just be quiet. Yeah. Like, Mayweather detects a
he comes out of the I guess they probably put his body in one of those kind of like freezers, knocks on the door, opens it, and then Selig goes, gotcha, and then closes the door.
Bitch. Mayweather detects a debris field too big for a ship. DePaul discovers that it was a planet 120 years in the past. Trip detects indicators that there has been a civilization here, including an alloy that matches the probe that attacked Earth. Archer orders them deeper into the expanse, although Reed detects more concentrated spatial distortions ahead. In the Zindi Council chamber, Dahlem reports that Enterprise has scanned the debris field and left. How do they even know this? Like, who's around that's sneaking around?
It's the Borg.
Orison distortion field. Jannar laughs, saying that it is unlikely they'll survive. The Zindi insectoid counselor thinks they may survive and wants to destroy them instead. Degra says it would be best to remain hidden in case it is the first ship of an invasion force. The Zindi insectoid tells them to finish the weapon quickly or he will destroy Enterprise. With or without the council's approval. Yo, that bug is ready, bro.
I know. He's like ready to throw down. He's like, I'm not waiting around for this shit.
I don't know what y'all bitches are out here sitting tea and bullshitting, because I'm ready to fuck some bitches up. All right.
It's cracking its knuckles. Like, I was like going, okay, you a little too aggressive? You need to calm down.
What needs to be fucking done? Like, holy shit, you all right, bro?
Do you need to talk to somebody?
All right, so this one has a bit of stuff. It looks like a lot because I've separated it out, but it really isn't. Story and script. This was the opener for the third season of Star Trek Enterprise and the beginning of a year-long Zindi incident story arc. Enterprise co-creator and executive producer Brandon Braga recalled, "We looked at the Zindi as a pilot of sorts. We were reestablishing an Enterprise that was going to be a little bit different this year. So we had to think of it in those terms. We wanted to set the new tone right away. And this isn't going to be your typical season and get everything rolling. So we really wanted to set up the Makos and to establish the Zindi right away. We thought it would be kind of startling to just plop them out and say, here we are." Star Trek Communicator, issue 151, page 27. It is, you know what's funny is a lot of people look back on the show and say, oh, when they made it one long story arc, it was so lame. They should have did that. It was kind of ahead of its time.
Well,
because that's how all TV is now.
Well, the thing was is that Enterprise was reacting to the changes in television at that time.
Yeah.
Because the season
like shows like 24 and shit were out.
The season before. Well, it came out in 2001, so I think when was this episode done? 2003?
Yeah.
Yeah. So two seasons before, when they started, you had 24, which is, and for those of you that don't know, it took a whole 24-hour cycle and did a whole episode within that 24-hour period.
Yeah, every hour was an episode, right?
Yeah, every hour of the show was an hour in time.
There are 8 episodes of him sleeping. Because it's important, you know, it's healthy. No, I'm just kidding.
And which everybody always said, you know, there's never a time where he's taking a shit, eating something, like it's like there's none of that. And I go, we don't even need to see it. All we need to just see him is to come out of a restroom or something like that, or just like eating, throwing a wrapper away, like he ate something. Like that's all we needed. Because I was heavily into that show because it was so new and everybody's like, oh, that's kind of interesting. So shows at that time started to do the serialized format because everything at that time was all, you know, episodic. So Star Trek was losing viewers because everybody was going to these. So they decided to do that. And what they did was with the third season, they tried to do that story, that 1 year story arc. It didn't work out so well because it just, I remember like falling out during parts of this season when I originally watched it. And, but also at the same time, I think they were up against 24. Like,
yeah, like, that's why I'm kind of curious. I'm kind of excited to rewatch it because now this format is old hat.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go, huh? Because I didn't watch 24 and all that shit. So when they did this in Star Trek, which is one of the few TV shows I watched, I was like, why is it like this?
Yeah.
Like, why is it the same thing? So now that I'm a little more used to it, also, you got to keep in mind, too, they changed the format, but they kept the same number of episodes in the season. So right. They're really dragging this fucking story out.
Right.
You know, because seasons now are like 13 episodes.
Yeah, especially when you get these kind of serialized episodes, it's 13 seasons, so it's a lot less filler. But the problem is you see when you drag out, like people say, oh, it should be this many episodes. Watch this season. This will tell you why you shouldn't do a serialized episode. And that's why they fixed it when they did season 4, because there would be two or three episodes that would be one continuous story. And then you would have an outlier episode, two outlier episodes, and then another two episode arc.
Which I thought were a good balance for Star Trek.
Yeah, it really worked well when it got into the fourth season. But yeah, this season, and most people kind of forget that's the cause of that was 24, because I think 24 ran up against Enterprise like the same time and day.
And 24, for people who don't, maybe too young or whatever, 24 was the show.
Yeah.
Like everyone was fucking watching 24.
It was a tense fucking show.
That's why I didn't like it. I was like, oh Jesus Christ, I feel like I'm gonna have a fucking heart attack.
The thing with that show too is that, you know, you had all these people and characters could die on a whim. Like it'd be a shocking, like you'd be like, oh shit, like they killed off this person. Oh damn.
Which is kind of common now, but it's common because of 24. Right. Like 24 changed everything.
Yeah. So that's why you saw like shows like Battlestar Galactica where, you know, characters would be on there and then they would die like midway through an episode. You'd be just like, oh shit. So that's where a lot of that came from. So, and I was a huge 24 fan for the first few seasons. I think that's why I missed season 3. And then I think when season 4, they actually stopped deciding to go up against 24 and moved it to because I think this season was moved on a Monday, and that's when 24 happened. So not having DVRs and stuff like that, it was choose. So
back then you couldn't watch everything all at once.
Right. So opted to watch 24 and try to catch Star Trek on a repeat, because that sometimes they would repeat those episodes.
Nowadays, the problem is getting someone's attention to watch it,
right,
not what slot it's in. Right. No, nobody cares about that.
Yeah.
Production. The Trillium D dirt in the mine was created by throwing lots of blue paint styrofoam into a wood chipper. It was really fucking dirt everywhere. Bits of the styrofoam stuck to everything and was tracked all over the Paramount Pictures lot. The Zindi text commentary, Enterprise season 3 DVD and Blu-ray special featurettes, which I need to purchase. The Zindi reptilian uniforms were actually Reman costumes from Star Trek Nemesis with metal coils added to the shoulders.
I thought they looked familiar.
Yeah, I did too. This is the first episode to use the newly modified version of Where My Heart Will Take Me in the opening credits, which was fucking weird.
Adam texts me like right when because I watched it yesterday, and then early this morning he goes, that's a weird upbeat version to put on this type of season. Like,
because it was a very it wasn't a depressing episode, but it was a serious episode.
Right.
And then all of a sudden it's like it's all like everyone's super serious, and all of a sudden it's been a long road. Hey, all right. It's like It's a croony fucking version of it, and it's just fucking weird.
And also, it's the first episode that actually goes Star Trek Enterprise.
Yeah, which I thought that was cool. Yeah. They should do that. What was that? Okay, continuity, bitches. This episode marks the first appearance of some of the Zindi regulars. Degra, Janar, Commander Dalum, Kiafet, Amonsor, I think that's the bug,
yeah.
And the Zindi Primate Counselor and the Zindi Insect Counselor. Oh, never mind. They never got names. And the Aquatic Counselor. They really like have every kind of species from Earth. It's right. A real menagerie over there. The aquatic and insectoid species are subtitled. The other species are heard in English. This was the first episode to feature T'Pol and Tucker's neuropressure sensors by unofficial beginning of the arc. I'm telling you.
So is that what the kids are calling it? Neuropressure sessions?
I'll give her a fucking neuropressure.
Oh, yeah, mom, dad. No, we weren't doing that. We were doing neuropressure sessions.
Right, exactly.
As the dad goes over and high fives and wearing his Star Trek t-shirt going like.
Yeah, right. This episode features the first appearance of Enterprise's new command center, as well as T'Pol's new civilian look. I kind of don't understand the purpose of the command center. You could have just used that little space behind the captain's seat.
Maybe they had extra money and decided to use it for.
Yeah. It was just dumb. They just threw a bunch of screens on a wall and called it a day. Like, yeah. I was like, okay, I guess you can make a new room. Maybe because it's bigger, so they can have more people in there.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, because I think they have the Mako dudes in there for briefings and shit. Mm. And the other spot wouldn't be big enough. Command center, as well as T'Pol's new civilian look. In addition, her eyebrows are now swept up in the traditional Vulcan manner.
I did like her new outfits, like, but they had this kind of 70s vibe to them. Like her mm-hmm. low cut collar.
But I've always thought the Vulcans had a 70s vibe to them. Mm. Like their clothes are kind of, they always look retro.
Yeah, but the thing was, is that the outfit she was, this brought up a point that I had told Adam. I go, so the Vulcans are very visual characters because if she was part of the Science Council and the outfit she wore was like, you know, like basically just her body painted. And then, like, oh, casual, you know, still kind of showed off her body, but was a lot less revealing.
Yeah.
And I'm sure probably more comfortable.
Maybe they can wear revealing skin-tight clothing like that because they only have sex, like, every 7 years.
Yeah, right.
You know, so they're okay with it. But, yeah, I like
until they're in the middle of Ponfar, like, well, she shouldn't be dressed like that.
Cover up, yeah. It's fucking hard that I'm going to fuck the shit out of her. I dug the new outfit because as much as we talk shit, we joke around about how hot she is or whatever, it was still a jumpsuit, you know, I get it, but it was a more like normal outfit. It wasn't I'm just here to look hot, because right. She's not. Like, she's a full-blown character, so. An orange benzite-looking species can be seen in the Trillium D mining facility. That's cool. The scene where the Makos descend on a rope firing during the rescue of Captain Archer from the mining facility was used in an alternate opening credit scene for In a Mirror Darkly and In a Mirror Darkly Part 2. I think I've seen that.
I'd have to.
Like, being used.
Well, when we get to that episode, I'll be able to.
Those episodes are fucking great, by the way. They're like my favorite alternate or my favorite Mirror Universe episodes.
And it was cool because they weren't even like, oh, these characters went. No, it was just this episode is in the Mirror Universe. Like, there's no regular Archer, nobody in
there. And I hate when people are like, oh, the Mirror Universe doesn't make any sense. It's not supposed to. It's supposed to just be fun.
Yeah.
Like, yes, we all know it doesn't make sense. But if we were in the Mirror Universe, we would think the main universe episodes didn't make any sense. You think about it, okay?
The more you know.
When asking T'Pol to give Tucker neuropressure, Phlox asks if she has any siblings and says Commander Tucker had one, a sister. The script and the remainder of the series neglects the brother he mentioned practicing the two-step with in Enterprise Fusion.
Yeah, because I thought he did have a brother.
Well, maybe he died too. The concept of abducting crews from passing ships and forcing them to work at the mining facility was previously visited in the Star Trek Voyager episode Workforce and Workforce Part 2. This episode takes place 6 weeks after the events of The Expanse. Reception and aftermath. Brandon Braga commented.
Hated the episode.
Huh?
Brandon Braga hated the episode.
Yeah, for real. We haven't actually heard him say he hated an episode yet.
Well, that's because we haven't had any of his comments in there.
That's true. Brandon Braga commented about this installment. It was a big episode, very ambitious. Braga more specifically remarked that because this outing established the Makos and the Zindi, as well as featuring an adventure with us and the Expanse, the episode set up a lot of stuff. So he doesn't say he likes it or dislikes it. He just says it was busy. There's a lot of shit going on.
Yeah. We
Star Trek Communicator issue 151, page 27. I used to buy that magazine. I used to have all the Star Trek magazines. And I was such a nerd, dude. And I loved every minute of it. Following this episode's production, bits of the styrofoam used in this installment was often found on the Paramount lot during the rest of the Star Trek Enterprise, even when the main sets were being taken apart after the season finale. These are the Voyages.
Worst the Zindi Tech finale, commentary. Worst season finale, series finale ever.
I know. The Zindi Tech commentary, Enterprise Season 3 DVD and Blu-ray special featurettes. This honestly, you can say what you want about the third season, but I think this two-parter was a solid entry. It established, especially the second part, it really establishes what's going on, what they're doing, the tone, the Makos. I mean, all that shit. I really enjoyed this episode.
Yeah, I thought this episode was cool. It had a more of an intensity, but I kind of knew right away, like, well, there's like 24 episodes in this season, so, you know, we're not going to be getting to them very quickly. So
I don't remember a lot of the episodes from the season, but I will say I do remember that the beginning half of the season is better than the end, if I remember correctly. I think it's like they lose steam somewhere in there.
Yeah.
And there's like a handful of episodes that are kind of whatever, and then they kind of start doing some shit again. I do remember that one where I think it's the next episode, actually. Let me scan real quick. I'd like to take a glimpse into the future.
I remember hearing that this show, because they had a full season long story arc, they would plan out episodes, I think, plan out quarters. Like they would do six episodes and then do that arc and then plan out the next six episodes and then try to do that arc.
And I heard that too, and you can tell,
yeah,
because the tone of those blocks is different, you know, and it's kind of weird. The next episode is Anomaly. It's not what I was thinking about. Enterprise is damaged by spatial anomalies and boarded by interstellar pirates who rob the ship of critical resources. There's an episode where T'Pol starts going crazy, and it just like they warned about the Vulcan ship where they tore each other's fucking eyeballs out and shit. and she does a really good job. It fucking scared me when I was younger. I was like, Jesus, this bitch about to kill everybody. So thanks for tuning in. Like, thanks for listening to this little slice of heaven, you know?
Thanks for joining our Star Wars, Star Trek podcast.
That's right. We're going to start a Star Wars podcast in a minute. Don't think we won't either. We have ditched the ads and would like to stay independent. We can only do that with your support. If you would like to donate to make this podcast and all the shows of the Lazy Geeks Network self-sustaining, you can go to thelazygeeks.com and click on the donate button.
And if you can't help us out monetarily, I get it. Shit gets tight, you know. You got to figure out, you know, do you need that much blow to get you through, you know?
You have time to listen to a podcast, okay?
And I know this week you're going to spend more because the relatives are probably coming over for Thanksgiving, and you're going to definitely want to get that blow to kind of get you through that weekend. I can tell you that much.
But Christmas is coming up, and there's no one more deserving of your money than the Lazy Geek. No, I'm just kidding.
But if you can't, you can share the show with your friends, rate the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Stitcher, wherever you can. It increases our exposure and, you know, helps get the name out there. So all of this helps.
You can check out all the other shows available on the Lazy Geeks Network. You can check out our flagship podcast, The Lazy Geeks. where we discuss being a geek in an adulting world, which is ever increasingly difficult. And Steve's new podcast, the Gen Xer podcast, where he discusses current problems through a Generation X point of view. All are available wherever you got this show.
And if you want to be part of the show, hit us up with comments, questions, or ideas for future episodes. Catch us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all under @TheLazyGeeks. Or email us, theawayteam@thelazygeeks.com. So that is it for us this week. So until next Black Friday, have a good Thanksgiving. Be safe. Don't be stupid. I'm Stephen Vargas.
I'm Adam Riley.
To beam up.